We're doing Parshat Pinchas. So we ended last parasha at a climax or anticlimax where Pinchas limps forward and he says, I want a piece of action too. And the people assume that he's going in there with intention to sin just like Zimri. And then when he approaches the tent, he pulls out a blade, attaches it to the stick he was walking on, and charges the tent and stabs Zimri and Cozbi and goes straight through them and picks them both up and holds them up. So the tribe of Shimon was ready to kill him. And Pinchas is in danger. He's in danger as he approaches, and he's in danger after what he's done. But there's a plague around him, and people are falling like flies. 24,000 people die. And then Hashem tells Moshe, tell the people, Pinchas caused the plague to stop. And so I'm giving him my covenant of peace. So Pinchas is now going to become a Kohen, something which he didn't have beforehand. When the kahuna was given, so it was given to Aaron, to Elazar, to Itamar, to Aaron's four children, Nadav and Avihu as well, and their descendants. But Pinchas was already born. It was too late. He did not get kahuna. And then now, after what he's done, so he became a Kohen as well. So now the Torah reveals to us who was the man who got killed. Doesn't say in last week's parasha. And Hashem tells Moshe, take revenge from the Midianites because they tried to put you down. They even sent their princess out to take you down. So you have to remember that and hold it against them. And then Hashem tells Moshe, I want you to count the Jewish people. So we have this count again. Remember the book of Bamidbar? We have a count over and over and over again. Yes.
You understand they punish because the leader of this tribe does it like with attention to sin. But the Midrash you told last week about the others, it seems more like they got tricked into it,
right,
and didn't have the attention. Why would they punish so much?
I wouldn't say they were tricked, I would say they were seduced.
To me it's the same thing.
No, because
it's not honest. Like when seduction is not honest or whatever. It is to,
you can say no.
Right. When a person's tricked, then they
wine, and afterwards some other wine, and then they did something that they didn't think was, you know, they didn't think they did adultery. It's like, and afterwards Hashem says in this, you know, because they tricked you, blah blah blah, go and make war against them. It seems like it wasn't like 100% their fault.
They were tempted.
100% their fault. Why go and make war with them?
They came to tempt us. That doesn't mean we don't have a responsibility to stand up to it. Both are true.
It was unclear to me how Pinchas missed getting the kahuna.
Because at the time that Hashem appointed Kohanim, so the Kohanim were anointed. Once they were anointed, so all future generations that they would give birth to would be Kohanim. No. So those that were anointed were Aaron and his sons. Pinchas was already born. There was no commandment to anoint him, so Pinchas did not become a Kohen.
He was underage?
Doesn't say why. The anointment was Aaron and his sons. From that point onward, any children they would have would become Kohanim. We don't know if they had kids yet.
Who was Pinchas' father? Saying he was a Kohen.
Pinchas was the son of Elazar, but Elazar wasn't a Kohen when Pinchas was born. The only reason Elazar's children are Kohanim is because Elazar was anointed. From then anointment onward, the children he would give birth to would be Kohanim. So Hashem tells us, divide up the land of Israel to these people, to the people you counted, and we're going to draw lots. And each tribe will get the same value territory. Some get larger swaths of territory that are cheaper, and others get smaller swaths of territory that are more expensive. So the tribe of Shimon which was very small at this point, gets a tiny territory within the tribe of Yehuda, but a very expensive territory. The tribe of Yehuda and the tribe of Binyamin had very expensive territory because their territory was around the Beit HaMikdash. They had major cities, so their territory was very expensive. It was smaller. Everyone got the same value. The question was, did you get size or value? So the Torah gives us the count of the tribes of Israel. And then we have the story of the daughters of Tzilofechad. They come in and they say, our father died for his own transgressions. He has no boys. And what happens to his portion? Do we inherit his portion? And we'll discuss that when we review the parsha. And Hashem says, give them the portion. And here we have the laws of inheritance. And then Hashem tells Moshe, look around, see the land I'm giving Israel. And after that, you're going to pass away just as Aaron did. And Moshe asks Hashem to appoint a new leader. And Hashem tells him, appoint your student, Yeshua. Moshe was hoping it would be one of his kids. And Hashem says, no, Yeshua has been working so hard, learning and studying and ensuring that everything's taught well. He's the next in command. And so Moshe puts his two hands on Yeshua and he appoints him the next leader. And then we have the sacrifices of the holidays. That's the last Aliyos of the Parsha. Now, let's review the Parsha. Why was Pinchas able to suppress or appease Hashem's anger? Pinchas stands up and says, can't let this happen. So he asks Moshe, what should we do? Didn't you teach us that zealots are supposed to kill someone who does such a thing? Moshe says, he's all yours. You're the one who reminded us the halacha. Go do it. Pinchas does it. And after he does it, the rest of Israel looks at him and takes a step back. And they don't touch him. The fact that they took a step back and did not touch him was a show that they were willing to go along with what he did. They were upset at him because initially they thought that this halacha that allows you to kill someone who does this is a license. It's not a mitzvah. So they said, what'd you have to do this for? Who are you? Why'd you charge him for? And then Hashem says, no, he was right. But the fact that Am Yisrael, in spite of the fact that they were not so happy with him, he had just killed the leader of Israel, but they respected him. They didn't kill him over it. That was a show of partnership, that Am Yisrael is partnering with his act. And that's how his act represented all of us. Now this is a concept that shows up quietly in a few places in Torah. That sometimes today they say the greatest oppressor is not the oppressor, it's the people who stand by silent. Sometimes our silence carries a huge volume, be it when the people are silent and Hur is murdered, the people are silent and Nada and Dasan goes and squeals on Moshe and forces Moshe into exile. The people are silent and the golden calf is brought. The silence of the people speaks volumes. So over here, the silence of the people was positive. They were backing Pinchas in his action. So Pinchas is given this treaty, Briti Shalom. Briti Shalom. Our sages say, Gadola Shalom. We have a whole chapter about peace in Masechet Derech Eretz. How great is peace? Hashem's name is peace. Person wakes up in the morning, we tell him, Shalom Aleichem. We read Kriya Shema, we end Kriya Shema with Aporeh Sukkot Shalom. We end Shmona Esrei, Hamvarech Tamo Yisrael, Shalom. We have Kaddish, we end it with Oseh Shalom. We have Shalom Aleinu. So peace is, Chazal say, it is the greatest vessel for blessing. All the blessings you have are contingent on peace. This is true in our home, this is true in our families, this is true in our relationships, this is true in us as a nation, this is true with us as a planet. peace is the greatest vessel for blessing. What does it mean he was given the covenant of peace? So there's the famous Medrash that Pinchas wouldn't die. He was given the covenant of peace. He's at peace with the angel of death. That Pinchas had longevity for centuries till the end of the period of judges. And according to one opinion, Pinchas is Elijah the prophet. Pinchas hu Eliyo. That's one opinion in Talmud.
Pinchas ma?
Hu Eliyo.
He never died?
According to one opinion, yeah.
According to that opinion, Pinchas lost his prophecy, and then he needed to re-get it back as Eliyahu.
Right. Correct. So, the man who is killed, we didn't tell you his name beforehand. The Torah keeps it under wraps. In Torah, the idea of mentioning a name carries a lot of weight. It's either we're mentioning the name to point out what's wrong with the person, or it's a tremendous credit. But there isn't much room for in between. So here, his idea of Zimri comes from the word Muzar, that he was scrambled. He brought to the surface. He shamed his whole family with his transgression. Shaul, he considered himself, he lent himself out to transgress. Knanit, he acted like a Knani. His real name was Shlumiel. He has peace with his God. But that's not the name we encounter in this story. That name is under wraps. So the Pasuk points out he is the head of which tribe? Shimon. Shimon were the big zealots who said, we can't let Shechem get away with this, with our sister Dina. And that's what the Pasuk says it almost in a as a question mark. Nesive tav la Shimoni. Is he really the leader of the tribe of Shimon? My father always told us a nice thought on this whole idea of Shimon and Pinchas. Shimon was the zealot, right? His father asks him, how'd you do it? And he says, how? What we can't let our sister be violated like that. And the conversation ends there. And then in this week's Parsha, we find the other extreme, right? The tribe of Shimon ends up being the tribe that transgressed with these women. Pinchas is the zealot, and in the end, his zealousness leads him to an act which in heaven was held against him. He says, I'm not giving in. I'm not going to go save that girl, Yiftach's daughter, when Yiftach takes the vow. Yiftach has to come to me. The daughter might die over this. Fine, but he has to come to me. So that zealousness reaches a point where it's hurtful. The story continues of Pinchas is Elio, that Pinchas shows up to the cave of Chorev, the cave of Sinai, and Hashem asks him, what you're doing here? And he says, look at how your people have transgressed. They've left your covenant. They've killed your prophets. I'm the only one left, and they try to kill me too. They're trying to kill me too. So Hashem says to him, Tamida tamkane. You're always with such zeal. You were zealous here, you were zealous there. Enough. Let's appoint a new leader. You have to come and start saying good things about Am Yisrael. So this idea of being a zealot, being someone who's a fire for something, can be very dangerous. It can sometimes end up hurting a person's own family. The Talmud tells us a story. There was a rabbi who left his son in charge of workers. So the workers said, hey, we didn't have lunch today. So the kid said, oh, there's a fig tree here. He said, fig tree, give fruits. Dad's workers shouldn't go hungry. So suddenly the fig tree sprouts out figs, and all the workers eat. His father comes home, and his father says, what happened with the meal for the workers? So the workers say, well, you weren't here. We asked the kid, and this is what the kid did. So the father looks at the kid, and he says, you made your creator do open miracles because you wanted to feed workers? You're not worth living. And the son drops dead. So Talmud says, what kind of person was that? Look at how tough he was. Wait a second. He was holy. You see, the son was holy. You see, the father was holy. And yet the Talmud says, what a dangerous, holy person that was. It says he saw his daughter walking, and people were talking about her looks. And he said, girl, God gave you life. God gave you beauty. to destroy the world? That's not what you're here for. Not worth your living. Boom, she drops dead. So Talmud says, holy person, but who wants to stay away? That's a dangerous holy person, right? His own children he didn't have mercy for. The Talmud brings it as a negative example of where a person can get to. So whether you take these stories literally or you apply the way we learned Rambam's son explains these stories, that's not the point. The point is, we see a trait. There's a trait of being zealous. There's a trait of fighting for something with everything you got. Well, we have to be careful how far we take that. It can sometimes reach a point where it's destructive, where a person is so zealous they don't even realize what they're doing. I wouldn't say they don't realize what they're doing, but they reach a point where they lose focus. So we move forward. Hashem says, maintain a hatred for the Midianites. Here we learn the concept, if someone comes to kill you, kill them first. If someone comes to hit you, hit them first. If someone comes to cause you to transgress, fight them. It says when a person causes someone to transgress, they're worse than someone who kills them. Ammon and Moab, we say, don't let them enter the Jewish people forever, because they were partners in causing us to transgress.
Because of this? Not because of Lot?
No. But the Mitzrim, the Edomim, wait a second, the Egyptians killed us. 3 generations, then they can marry into the Jewish people. We don't say it's an eternal ban. Because if someone causes someone else to sin, they're worse than someone who killed them. With Midian, we have a special rule. Ordinarily, when we go to war, we offer peace first. We say, you want to make peace? You could pay taxes. You could be subservient. Not with Midian. Ordinarily, when we go to war, we leave the trees intact. We leave the country intact. Not with Midian. With Midian, we have a special hatred. They took their princess. They took their chosen people and said, just make the Jews full. Violate yourself. Do everything. Just make the Jews full.
Shaul was punished for not killing the sheep.
Okay. It's different. It's different. We have a count. We have a count. Count is very important. You guys show up to the Shabbos meal. It's important to address each child. And very often it's important to address starting with the youngest. So the oldest will be quick to talk. Start with the youngest. Go from the youngest. Benjamin, what was your day like? What was your week like? Joseph, what was your week like? I'm going backwards in the order of the tribes, right? Naphtali, Dan, Zvulun, Yisachar, you work your way backwards. Start with the youngest, so they have an opportunity. They can tell you a little bit about what their week is like. The idea that Hashem tells Moshe to count the Jewish people gives every person a sense of importance. I was asked to speak in front of my son's sixth grade class a few years ago. First thing I did, like 30 kids sitting at the table, was I asked the Rabbein, can I just have 2 minutes before I start? They said, yeah. I said, okay, each child, can you tell me your name? The fact that everyone got to tell us their name made each person feel like there was a personal connection. When I ask you guys to introduce yourself, I'm not only doing it for the new guy in the class. It also gives a person a feeling like I exist in this class. I'm not part of the masses. I'm not just a part of the class. My name counts. Who I am matters. And so Moshe counts each person. There's a feeling of importance there. The second concept is the transfer of leadership. This is a concept which will be relevant to you. It is relevant to each of us on one scale or another. My father would pound into us, learn from the brilliance of Moshe. Moshe saw he was going to die. He appointed the next leader before he was down and out. Very often we have our vision. It can be the family. It can be the business you've built. It can be the yeshiva. It can be the shul. It can be many things that you built. And the brilliance is when you could pass the mantle so that it can continue to succeed when you're gone. The brilliance is not only in what you build when you're here. Moshe Rabbeinu in this week's parsha does many actions to show I'm passing the mantle. He takes a count. Taking the count is, I will give you an exact number of who you're responsible for, Yehoshua. What? Yes. Yes. We'll get there in a minute. So Datan and Aviram, they die. So their inheritance goes to the family of Palu. And the pasuk over here is indicating to us this idea that everything was lost. Datan and Aviram lost their portion in Israel. The Torah tells us that, yeah.
Saying Datan and Aviram lost everything. And
Korach didn't. Right. Right. Interesting point. Right. Right. The Torah tells us there was a man named Asher, one of the 12 tribes, and he had a daughter named Sarah. So there's a medrash that she walked into the Garden of Eden alive. When I was a child, they told us something which I never found a source for. When I was a child, they told us that Sarah Bas Asher is still among us. And that she remained looking young, and that she's still among the Jewish people. We just don't know who she is. She keeps herself hidden. That's what they told me as a kid. I don't know how many times she married, right? She shouldn't have married a king, because the widow of a king can't remarry. So she had to keep... And she can marry another king, right? So the Targum says that she wasn't his daughter. She was Asher married a woman who had a child from a previous marriage, and he raised her. So Sarah Bas Asher wasn't his biological daughter. And from there we extrapolate an important concept that if someone raises an orphan in their home, an adopted child, so then the norm is that the person calls the child my child, and the norm is that the child calls them their parent. And when the child gets an aliyah, so they use the name of their adopted parent. And when they write a ksuba, so they write in the ksuba, the adoptive parent. There is such an opinion in Halacha. There's a sefer called Chuvos Maimoni, and he writes like that. That we learn that all from here. That even though Asher wasn't her biological father, the Torah says she was his daughter. And based on this, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that daughters inherit their fathers. So what was his question with the daughters of Tzlafchad? We'll see that in a minute. Yes. Oh, that's a good question. Why not? That's another question. Thursday night. Next Thursday. Next Thursday. So how did they divide the land of Israel? The Kohen Gadol was Elazar, the son of Aaron. He wore the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. All of Am Yisrael stood in mass before him. They had a box which had the lots. And it said the names of the 12 tribes. They had another box that said the portions, the sections of the land of Israel. And then Elazar would focus himself and say with Ruach HaKodesh, I'm going to stick in my hand, and if the tribe of Zebulun comes out, then the portion of Akko should come out with it. He'd stick his hand into the boat too, and Zebulun would come out, and Akko would come out. And that's what he did with each tribe. And then the tribe would have to divide it within their families, as the Torah records in our parasha. The Torah says, we're ready to enter the land of Israel. No men left from that generation who transgressed with the spies. And the Medrash right away points out, but women were left. The idea is no men above 20. Right? Yeah.
The fourth parak, the Rashi Tosfot, 11,000 people, they Tetuvah, I'm saying that was...
Just think of an answer yourself.
They were under 20?
Think about it.
They buried themselves.
Think about it. No. You ask a good question, I think of a good answer. So, the daughters of Tzlafchad walk in. And they say, we are descendants of a man named Tzlafchad. Five daughters, right? Five daughters. And they said, we come from the tribe of Menashe, the son of Yosef. Why is that important? Because Yosef loved the land of Israel. So we keep mentioning him. One of the things you guys will notice is that there are two types of people in this world. There are people who love the land of Israel, and there are people who still have to learn how to love the land of Israel. You will see this. You think I'm joking? I'm not joking. You will see there's a part of a person's soul that gets revealed when they can connect to the land of Israel. And there are people who have revealed it, and there are people who have not. And it's very hard for the people who have not. But you will see this. There are people who are always, they're connected. I have a relative who always makes fun of the Zionistic communities in Chutz Lars. They say, what's Zionistic about them? They're in Chutz Lars. They don't board a plane. How can they be Zionistic? Oh, so they wave a flag. So they celebrate Yom HaTzimut. And I don't agree with this relative. I say, it's not true. These are people who have an importance. They might have a weakness that they have certain things holding them back, and they might have legitimate reasons holding them back. But they are. It's important to them, and the proof of it is that very often their children do come, and they're very proud of it, and eventually they do come. So I don't see it that way. So over here, Yosef, who spent the most time in Chutz Lars of all the tribes, his great-granddaughters, the daughters of Tzlafchad, they wave the flag. We are descendants of Yosef, the man who loved Israel, who told his descendants, bury me in Israel. So now they tell Moshe, but our father was not one of the people in Korach's group. Why is that so important to mention? They're saying, we deserve a portion of the land of Israel. Dasan in Aviram, they don't get a portion. But we, our father died for a different reason, and we learned the Mishnah on Tractate Shabbos only a few weeks ago in our In Yaakov class, where Rabbi Akiva suggests that Tzlafchad was the Mekoshesh. He was the one who was harvesting wood on Shabbat. He died of his own transgressions, and he had no kids. So you know what Rabbi Yehuda Alevi says, how you read the Pasuk is? The Pasuk is saying he died of his own transgressions, and that's why he died without boys. Meaning, ordinarily, he should have had boys. The fact that he died without boys is not a good thing. A person should try to also have boys. You got to have girls. You should also have boys. And if he, the idea is, we assume
he got five kids. He's not like he's
right,
married yet.
Right, but we assume that a daughter moves into her husband's house. She becomes part of her husband's family, even though today it's not that way. But in ancient times, it was assumed that a daughter flew away, and the son was then the continuation of the house. When you married off a kid, you built him a little hut next to your house, right? You built him a cottage next to your house. Your son stayed there.
I figured Tzlafchad was like, because I'm saying there's the midrash that they all went back to their wives on the 7th of Nisan, Sivan, and they all had boys. So not only did he have five daughters, but he didn't even married in that. So I'm saying, like, what do you want from the guy?
Maybe he wasn't married yet. That was 40 years ago. We're at the end of the 40 years.
So he was. But when did he do the Mekoshesh?
The Mekoshesh.
The beginning of the.
Okay. So maybe he was 16. He was.
I'm saying, what do you.
Okay. So you have a good point. If he was the Mekoshesh, you have a very good point. Coming back to here. So the idea of Ben comes from the word Bonet. He's the one that builds the continuation of your house.
Right, but it's not a... But they didn't decide to have a daughter.
Right, but Chazal viewed it as a... It's not a good thing. It's interesting that they could mention their father's transgression. We're all going to do this tomorrow. In our tefillah of Shiva Sab Tammuz, we say every fast day, "Avala nachnu v'avotenu chatanu." We say our fathers transgressed too. You see, you could do that sometimes. So what did they do? They didn't really come to Moshe. They went to this court, and that court bumped it up, and everyone bumped it up. What were they really doing? They didn't want to come to Moshe, because they were scared that Moshe was tainted, that Moshe had something against their father. That's why they give this explanation. Our father died of other causes. He did his own transgressions. Moshe said, if you guys are worried that I am biased, I'm not touching it. We're going to ask Hashem. Hashem will rule on this case. That's an important concept. Sometimes we know we're not biased. It's not enough. Better ask someone else. Now, this is true in many relationships. It's true at work. Sometimes you shouldn't decide. A friend of mine hired another friend of mine. And then he asked me, should I fire him? And I said, don't ask me. He's a friend of mine. You do your homework. Don't ask me. I knew he had to be fired. It was obvious to me he had to fire him. But why should I tell him to fire my friend? So I said, do your homework. Don't ask me. You know he's my friend. Why should you bring me into this? And he did his homework and he fired him. And the guy till today thinks it's my fault. It didn't help me. I didn't say a word. I really didn't. But what can I do?
You also find this with Moshe when he says, Kichatzot alaylon.
Right?
Bichatzot
alaylon. Right?
People wouldn't, you know, believe it.
Yeah, but this is also true in marriage. Sometimes your wife's going to ask you a question halachically, and you know the answer. Not a good idea. Export the questions. Ask someone else. Let someone else answer. Because if you're the one who gives the answer, if you're the one that says, that pot's strafed, there's nothing we can do with it. Finished. Well, you ruined my pot. You told me I had to throw out the pot. You're going to say, what do you mean? What did I said? Halacha said. You said. You're the bad guy. So it's important, export it. Moshe says, it shouldn't come from me. Let me ask Hashem. So Hashem tells him the laws of inheritance, that the daughters of Tzlafcha do inherit. What was their question? They knew they inherited their father. Their question was, their father was a firstborn. Do they also inherit his double portion? Meaning, his father had brothers. Let's say there's Tzlafcha and three brothers. So Tzlafcha is supposed to get a double portion. We divide it as though there were five kids instead of four. And he gets two of those portions. They knew they get his principal portion. Do they also get his double portion? And that Hashem said yes. There's an interesting medrash. Why did this mitzvah come through these women? So one medrash says, because women brought death to the world when Eve gave Adam to eat from the fruit. So that's why the laws of inheritance came through women. The other medrash says the women loved the land of Israel. When the men were willing to forgo the land and follow the spies, the women said, we want life. We want to go to the land of Israel. And with you or without you, we're going. And so the women didn't die with the transgression of the spies. That's why we bring the laws of inheritance of the land of Israel through the women. They have both aspects to them. Hashem tells Moshe, I want you to see the land, and then you will pass away. So Rabbeinu Yerucham says it's to be read the other way. V'ra'ita otah, when will you see the land? V'ne'asafta lamecha, when you pass away. That's when you'll see the land. You won't see it from here. I want you to see the spiritual aspects which you can't see from here. Moshe says, Rabbon Shalom, you just taught us that children take over for their parents, boy, girl. Who should lead the Jewish people? Moshe thinks it's a good opportunity to get my kids in. And Hashem says, Yoshua. And Moshe's bothered. And Hashem says, well, Yoshua is the one that always arranged the academy. He was dedicated in learning by you. And so he should be the one to lead. It sounds like Yoshua was not bigger than Moshe's kids. It sounds like, technically, Moshe's kids should have led the Jewish people. It sounds like Moshe wanted his kids to lead, not only because they were his kids, but also because they were more qualified. Hashem doesn't answer Moshe and say, Your kids are just they're not on the level of Yeshua. He knows much more Torah than them. That's not what Hashem answers. Hashem says, Yeshua was dedicated all these years. At the end of the day, he would arrange the seats. Everyone could come and learn tomorrow. He never missed a beat. He was always learning by you. He should lead them. And here we see the value of consistency, more than the value of what level he's on. If Yeshua was always there, so Yeshua is the one that should lead. The Gemara says about him, the Pasuk, Notzer Teina Yochal Pirya. The fig tree is unique. It's not like other trees. Its fruit blossom two or three at a time. So when you go to the fig tree, you can pick fruits and come back tomorrow and you have more fresh fruits. And every few days you can find a bunch of delicious fruits on the fig tree. It's not like other trees. It's not one harvest. Every time you look, you see other things. So the Pasuk says, Notzer Teina, he who watches the fig tree, Yochal Pirya, will eat its fruit. Because you got to keep an eye on it. Well, Chazal say that's the truth about Torah too. If you're constantly looking at what you're learning, then you gain from the Torah. Yeshua kept an eye on the ball. He kept learning. So he's the one that ultimately took over the leadership of the Jewish people. Hashem tells Moshe, give him some of your glory. He should shine like you. We don't know what that means. Moshe had control over his shine. And it says that the people said, Yeshua got some of Moshe's glory. He's like the moon. Moshe is the sun and Yeshua is the moon. Hashem wasn't too pleased with that people spoke that way about Yeshua. Yeshua, Hashem will say, that's not a way to talk about him. And that's one of the things that happened with the splitting of the Jordan, that the Jewish people stand back and say, wow, okay, we take that back. It's only for 2 months until, a year and 2 months. We have the whole year that's going to go by now. Well, not exactly. It's from the period of now until the period. That's a good question. Until the period of Yeshua splitting the Jordan, then the people won't say that anymore. Then they'll realize how great Yeshua is. So that's another weakness we see, a recurring theme in Judaism. We tend to look and say, the rabbi when we were growing up, now that was a rabbi. We look at different situations and we put down the people who are the leaders in our time. We look back at other people and we say, they're not up to par. Now this has been a weakness throughout our history.
Did no one die? Because in Shaul, when they were like, they disrespected Shaul and Shaul was quiet, the people died. So here, no one got punished?
I don't know, because the Medrash does say these were the elders, that the people who spoke this way were the elders who accompanied Yeshua. And it does say that they didn't outlive Yeshua by more than a few days or whatever. So I don't know. I didn't notice if that's supposed to be juxtaposed. I don't know. So Moshe asks for a leader who will understand all the people. Just because someone's a big Talmud Chacham doesn't mean he can understand you. There's a special gift that someone can understand other people. And very often there's a chemistry. And that's something you have to find in a teacher. Moshe asks Hashem, I want someone so unique that they could connect to everyone. That's not the nature of people. It's an extraordinary person who could connect to everyone. That's what he asks for in Yeshua, so all the Jewish people will connect to him. But ordinarily you don't find that. And that's legitimate. It's part of our weakness, it's part of our teacher's weakness. Yes? To teach them Torah. To understand them when they come to him. No, the idea is to understand them. Right. It's very hard to understand people. It's very hard. Very, very hard. I could tell you I don't know. People ask questions and it's very, very, very hard to understand them. Very hard. I can give you stories. Um, they're going to sound weird to you, but they're not weird. People have very different perspectives on life. And so when you're dealing with people and they're asking you questions and you have to teach them Torah, you have to understand where they're coming from. It's very hard. It's very hard. I can tell you that it's very, very, very hard. One person called me up about a situation of life and death, and I told you guys the story in the last 10 days where his relative, the doctor said, would die that night. And he wanted to know certain halachot. And then 5 days later, the relative was still alive. So it suddenly struck me, hey, what I answered him was based on understanding the person's going to die that night. It's not the same answer now that that's being disproven. So I rushed out of bed. I was like about to fall asleep when this thought struck me. And I called him up. And he tells me, of course, I took that for granted, that all your answers are null and void. They're not relevant anymore. Everything you told me was with certain understandings which are not there anymore. So that's one person. He understood that. That was a given to him. Then you have other people who are the exact opposite. But Rabbi, you said, you're taking it back? What do you mean? You asked me this scenario, right? So you have to understand the person you're talking to. And, very, very hard. I can. There's a story that the Brisker Rav was giving class, and a wagon driver ran in, and he said, "Can a kohen take a divorcee?" So the Brisker Rav looked at him and said, "Sure." So he says, "You're sure? I heard people saying a kohen can't take a divorcee. A kohen can take a divorcee." He says, "Yeah, go ahead." So he runs out. "Thank you, Rabbi." So all the students look at the Brisker Rav and they say, "Well, how did you tell him that?" So the Brisker Rav said, "He's married with a bunch of kids. He's happily married. Don't worry about it." So they said, "Then what was the question?" So he said, "He's a kohen and he drives a wagon. And he heard people saying a kohen can't take a divorcee. There's a divorcee in town who uses his services often. And he thought he's not allowed to take her in the wagon. So he came in and asked me, can a kohen take a divorcee? And the answer is yes, he's allowed to take her in the wagon. That's his job. And there's no problem carrying her in the wagon." Okay, so he understood the question, right? It's not so simple. In the stories, it always works out right. In real life, it's a huge challenge to understand people. Right? To understand where they're coming from. People have very, very different perspectives on life. Extraordinarily different perspectives on life. There are people who won't call the rabbi until they're almost dead. And then there are people who call the rabbi over every sneeze. Should I say gesundheit? I'm not sure if my husband sneezed yet. But maybe it was a half sneeze. Is it a bracha levatel if I say gesundheit when he didn't sneeze? Okay. Now you have to understand both people. And you have to know how to answer them. It's very hard. I can tell you there was a psychologist, Rabbi Greenwald, who corresponded with the Stipler of Chaim's father. And you see the genius in his answers, how he understood every person in his answers. It's just genius. He wrote a book out of it afterwards, all those answers. Because he, as a psychologist, religious people were asking him questions and he needed to know how to answer them halachically. So it's very hard. Coming back to here, that's why Chazal say, try to find a woman who comes from your same town. You'll share perspectives. It helps. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu asks for a leader who will lead the people, who will go in front of them. In Judaism, the leader goes to war and he leads them to war. He's not sitting behind the troops. And Moshe is told, put your hand on him and make him the leader. And Moshe puts both hands on him. And that's the way a normal parent and Rebbe behaves. They want their child and their student to be better than them. They give them as much as they can give them. A normal parent or child, as the Medrash says, Rabbi Akiva said to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Yoter me'asher ha'egel rotze linok, ha'pora rotza le'enik. More than the egel, the calf wants to nurse, the cow wants to give its milk. That's the way a normal parent behaves. You want your kids to have as much as you can give them. Your only regret is that you can't give them more. You don't spoil them because of that. You give them what's good for them, but you want them to have. It's not a struggle or a fight or a war of wills or egos. If a child says something and he tells you you're wrong, you should say, great, You got me. Good for you. You're 100% right. If a child says, I want to be more religious, Dad. I want to be more observant. I had one kid who told me, Dad, I'm only going to eat this meat and that meat. So I said, listen here. If you learn it, and you come up with a good understanding of why you think this kashrus is the only one that's legitimate, I'll respect it, no problem. But if you're going to bring me politics into the house, you have no idea what you're talking about. You just hear people say things, and you think, oh, I won't eat this and I won't eat that. You could starve, that's okay. I'm not buying different food for politics. If you're real, you want to be more observant than me, you think you understand things better, I'll respect that. That's fine. Study it, understand it, you come to a different conclusion, we'll try to run the house in a way that matches the way you see it. That's fine. We could be more stringent if it's real. Because a parent should want his child to be better than himself. My father always used to tell us, I should be your minimum. You don't strive to be me. You look at me and you say, I got to do better than that. That's we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem says, put one hand on him and bless him. Moshe puts both hands on him. He gives him as much as he can. A parent, a teacher should want his students to outdo him. Now, there was a parent once who was complaining. He said, my children say they don't want to eat in my house. So the guy sitting next to him in shul said, it's better that your children say they can't eat in your house than you say that you can't eat in their house. But, if your children are more stringent than you and now you have to figure out how to make your house kosher for them, that's a good thing. So that's the idea we learned from Moshe putting both hands on Yehoshua. He wants him to have as much as possible. We have the sacrifices. We discussed yesterday the Tamid, the importance of consistency every day of the year. Yom Kippur, Shabbat, every day of the year, two sacrifices. One in the morning, one in the evening. And then we have the sacrifice of each holiday. We know that on Pesach there's a consistent, every day, same sacrifice. And on Sukkot we have sacrifices that reduce by number every day, corresponding to the nations, which we believe, as powerful as they are on their way down. And finally, we have the sacrifice of Rosh Chodesh. And at this point, we'll do our Dov's Minute and discuss the sacrifice of Rosh Chodesh. Wish everyone a good night.